My name is Jason Bryant. I'm originally from Virginia Beach, Virginia, southeastern portion of Virginia, which is on the east coast of the United States. And I grew up in what the South is, so some words that I say have different dialects. Like when I talk to my mom, it's like, what are y'all doing? Y'all. That's a word I use. That's not common language, but it's part of the dialect. I currently live in Minnesota now, which is in the northern part of the country, just south of Canada. And a lot of people there, you'll hear a lot of O's, and they'll hold their O's longer. So where are you going? I say, I will go to Fargo. My wife will say, I'm going to Fargo. Aprende inglés gratis con mencioningles.com y inglespodcast.com.
Hello and welcome to all of you. This is Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig, and it's episode 93. If you're a new listener to this award-winning podcast, welcome. Craig and I, with over 40 years of teaching between us, hope to help you improve your English and take it up to the next level. In this episode, we'll be answering a question we got from our feedback about starting and finishing emails. Also about the subjunctive, el subjuntivo in English, and the difference between avoid and prevent, and a few more of your questions and comments. But first, let me pass you over to my good friend Craig. Hello, Craig.
Hi, Reza. How are you doing?
I'm fine. And you?
Great to be back on the microphone for another fantastic episode of Aprender Inglés con Nosotros.
Have you been busy this week?
I've been very busy, and it's been a beautiful weather here in Valencia, a lovely sunny day today, and very excited about the spring. Can't wait. Looks good. How are you?
I'm fine, although my voice may sound a little odd today. My nose seems to be slightly blocked. I don't know why.
You're constipated.
I'm not constipated. No. The other end is not blocked.
You have a blocked nose.
I have a blocked nose, not estreñido, constipated. No. Well, Craig, shall we get down to business?
Yes, let's start. So first of all, thank you so much to our good friend Javier for giving us a wonderful bottle of olive oil.
Oh, thank you, Javier. It is really, really good olive oil. In fact, I think it's probably the best olive oil I've ever tried.
Have you tasted it yet?
Yeah. Fantastic.
I haven't opened it. I'm saving it for a special occasion. But somebody told me that it is very, very good quality. So I'm looking forward to tasting that. And Javier is a regular listener and a friend of ours here in Valencia. So thank you very much, Javier, for your gift. And Javier also asked us to speak a little about how to begin and how to end emails, maybe letters and notes and that kind of thing. So we haven't spoken about that yet. Let's look at how to start and finish, particularly emails. Now, before we do this, Reza, I would like to ask you if you think there's a difference between the way you teach your students to start and finish emails for an exam and the way you actually do it yourself when you're writing formal emails.
Maybe a little bit, not much. I tell you what it is, Craig. My writing in formal, or what is supposed to be formal emails, depends very much on the other person, the person I'm corresponding with. If they are a little bit more informal than normal, then me too.
Right.
So I respond to what I receive. So let's start with formal emails, or letters, in fact, on paper. Dear John might be a way to begin an email if you know that the person is called John. And I would say that's more typical when you've already had some contact with John. Otherwise, better to start, dear Mr. Smith. Let's say his name is John Smith. So yes, you can use the first name, John, but it's more formal to use the surname, dear Mr. Smith, or for a woman, dear Mrs. Smith.
So if they're... go ahead.
Dear Mrs. Smith. If she's married.
If she's married.
If she's married.
And what if she is single, if she's not married?
I would write Ms. M-S. Some people might write Miss M-I-double-S. Fine. I wouldn't myself.
What's the difference between Miss and Ms. M-S? M-I-double-S and M-S.
Miss M-I-double-S means she's not married. Ms. MS means you don't know.
It's a secret.
That's why I prefer to use it, because the way I see it is with Ms. MS, you can't offend anyone because you're not saying, not presuming she's married or not. That's why I prefer to use it.
And if you know the name of the person you're writing to, so you've said, Dear John, Dear Mrs. Smith, or Dear John Smith, how do you finish the letter? Is it yours sincerely or yours faithfully?
I teach it as a rule that if you've written a name, either John or Mr. Smith, etc., you must finish yours sincerely. I consider that a strict rule myself.
I agree.
A convention.
For an exam.
Yes.
And if you don't know the name of the person you're writing to, dear sir or dear madam, and if you don't know if you're writing to a male or a female, a man or a woman, I usually write dear sir stroke madam or bara. So dear sir, bara, madam.
And how do you end?
Yours faithfully. And the way I remember, or when I was a child, I remembered, because never be sincere with a person you don't know. You can be faithful, but don't be sincere. Don't be too sincere if you don't know the person, if you don't know their name. And that's how I remember. If I know the name, it's yours sincerely. If I don't know the name, it's yours faithfully.
Craig, can you spell madam, please?
M-A-D-A-M.
Right. No E at the end.
No E. That's French, isn't it?
That's madame. French. Yeah. Or it's another word in English, but it's not used as an address, like dear sir, dear madam, dear doctor. If it's a doctor, you can write dear doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm writing to my doctor about my health question I have. I would write dear Dr. Smith. Yes. Or if I don't know the doctor's name, but I know it's a doctor I'm writing to, just dear doctor.
Absolutely. Now, let me ask you this, because yesterday I wrote an email to a hotel in London. I wanted to reserve a room for when we go to the conference in June. So I wanted to ask if there is availability. I wanted to ask how I can pay for the room. I did not know the person I was writing to. And I said, I started the email with hi, and I finished it with best regards or best wishes. You wouldn't say hi.
No, but I don't think it's a big deal. No es gran cosa. It's not a big deal that you did. But I'm just a little bit more formal than you, I guess. I never begin hi with people that I haven't communicated with before.
Mm-hmm. So you would, in that situation, say, dear sir or madam?
Yep.
Right.
For a business transaction with people I've never communicated with, I would always write dear. At the beginning, unless they started the communication and they wrote hi to me first, then I would respond with hi.
Right. Another way I sometimes begin an email is good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Would you do that?
Never. But plenty of people write to me that way, and that's fine. But I don't. I just don't do it. Because I'm a bit of a stickler. That's the word for someone who perhaps is too obsessed with rules or concepts. I'm a stickler. I think, well, good morning, right? Maybe it's the morning when I write this email, but the person might get it in the evening. So I don't see much point in me writing good morning if they're going to read it at 10 o'clock at night.
That's a good point. I never thought of that. Yeah.
That's why I don't read it. That's why I don't write that. But people do. People do.
And I sometimes finish with best wishes, all the best, warm regards or best regards or kind regards, as a way of finishing formal or semi-formal emails. I don't remember the last time I finished an email with yours faithfully or yours sincerely.
For me, there's more chance of using yours faithfully than yours sincerely. Because yours faithfully, in my opinion, is the best thing to write if you don't know the person's name and you want to be formal. However, if you do know the person's name, we said that you should write yours sincerely if you want to be formal. But best wishes, kind regards, etc. are also formal enough for people whose name you know. So I would start myself with yours faithfully. Mm-hmm. But then perhaps if we want to get more informal, once we get some communication going, I might then change it later to best regards, best wishes, etc., kind regards.
And would you use contractions in a formal letter, a formal email? For example, you can finish with, I look forward to, plus gerund, I look forward to receiving the information, I look forward to meeting you at the airport, etc. Would you finish with, I'm looking forward to?
I would write, I am looking forward to, without a contraction. Mm-hmm. But no, I wouldn't contract the verb to be in a formal email.
Right.
Just to be on the safe side. Some people think it's no big deal. Okay. But on the other hand, it's no big deal not to contract it. So to be on the safe side, I don't contract it. And I teach my students that.
So I think Reza and I agree on one thing, that for the exam, then you should follow the guidelines that we've suggested here of no contractions, yours sincerely, yours faithfully. But when you are not writing for an exam and you're writing emails, it's very much a personal choice. If you're not sure, as Reza says, I think it's better to be more formal than not formal enough. What about informal communication? How would you begin an email with someone you're very familiar with, you have a good relationship with them?
Well, then I would say there really aren't strict rules at all. You can begin an informal email or letter. Hi, hello, plus the person's name. Hi, Bob. Hello, Bob.
How's he going?
How's it going, Bob? Or...
what's up?
Sometimes we don't write people's names, even though we know it. We just write, hi there.
Hi there.
Yeah.
Hi there. Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
Americans write hey, don't they? H-E-Y. Hey.
Things like that.
Exclamation mark.
Really, it's very flexible. It depends on how comfortable you feel with that person, how well you think you know them.
Right. And how would you finish?
Again, it depends. Here, I think cultural differences come into it a lot. Mm-hmm. Spanish speakers love to send out hugs and kisses a lot. And that's very nice. And it's a pleasure to receive them.
Un abrazo.
Un abrazo. But
besitos.
For me, for an English-speaking man to send out a hug or a kiss, it's not very common.
Especially
not
to another
so
man.
Common, yeah. Kisses for another man, just forget about it.
No.
I'm absolutely not going to do it. Now, I know that's maybe silly, but that's the tradition. In English-speaking custom, English-speaking countries, I beg your pardon, you don't really send out kisses to another man unless he is your lover and you're gay. That would really be the only case, as far as I can see. What would you say?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I've started to finish informal emails with cheers instead of lots of love, hugs and kisses, and sometimes also emails that are of a business nature, not necessarily to friends, but more online colleagues. Instead of finishing regards, best regards, I finish cheers. Because I've noticed that American English, they also know what cheers means. And because I'm in contact with American English speakers, it's kind of nice to finish it with a British English expression like cheers, which is kind of thanks, you know, see you soon, goodbye.
What about to begin an informal email or letter? Good day.
Good day.
And that's, yeah, abbreviated to good day. I've received letters, eh? Not even emails, letters from Australia. Yes, they took a week to get to my house, and they began good day. G apostrophe D A Y. Australians like to say that.
Which means good day. Yeah. Good day, mate. Any other points about informal emails or formal emails?
About the ending, it can be very, very formal. It depending on the context. I often write the word thanks before my name to end an email. So blah, 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 blah. Thanks, comma, Reza.
Yeah.
When it's an email, when I'm thanking somebody. So the way I sign off, to sign off is the opposite of greet. I sign off, thanks, Reza. Because you've done something
for me. Yeah, I do that too.
Or see you soon. Or till tomorrow. When you've agreed to meet, for example, so see you Tuesday or see you at 10 o'clock until Friday, and then your name. You can do all that as well.
Next, we have some feedback from another Javier from Burgos. Hi, Javier. Javier found us around episode 44, he says, and he went back to number one, episode number one. Wow. And now he needs more than one episode per week because he's listened to all of them. Well, I admire your tenacity, Javier, your staying power and your dedication to improving your English. He says, I'm used to listening to a daily podcast of you. And this must be true because Javier correctly said, listen to. Well done, Javier. So he listened to a daily podcast and he said, if he were the president of the government, he would declare our podcasts of national interest. And I would enact a law forcing you to release a podcast every day. Poor Craig and Razor. We'd love that, wouldn't we?
We would. Well, I tell you what, Javier, as we're recording this, at the moment, Spain, having had elections recently, doesn't have a future government. They can't negotiate completely yet who's going to be the president. So why don't you, Javier, on our behalf, por nuestra parte, why don't you call the Partido Popular, the Socialists, Ciudadanos and Podemos, and tell them to include as a requirement to any agreement that our podcast be made a legal requirement.
I second that, and that they pay us to do it, and we would be the happiest podcasters in Europe. I like the way Javier used the expression to enact a law. Did you notice that? You can also say to pass a law, aprobar una ley. But I like that enact a law forcing you to release.
Yeah, nice collocation.
Javier says he has a doubt because sometimes he has trouble translating the Spanish subjuntivo into English. He says certain expressions are clear to me, such as the typical verb plus pronoun plus two infinitive, like I told you to come earlier, and some others, such as using certain verbs with the bare infinitive, verbs like recommend and suggest. And he gives the example, I recommend that you study more. It is recommended that you study more. His doubt is with other examples apart from these, the aforementioned examples, such as no creo que vaya a la fiesta. I don't think I go, or I don't think I will go to the party. And he asks which one is correct. Are they both correct?
No.
No, they're not, are they?
I will go.
Is correct, Reza?
I will go is the correct one.
Yeah, but it's not the English subjunctive of I will go. It's a future. Will is a modal verb that's sometimes used for future intentions. Do you agree with that? I'll go?
Yeah. A modal verb used for future intentions, which is exactly the point, isn't it? That
Or a decision at the moment of speaking. I'll go to the party. Yeah, I'll go to the party.
Yeah,
I'll go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, you're right. Yeah.
Javier continues with his email. Besides concerning the examples with the bare infinitive, I think that with some verbs, there is only that possibility. I mean, I recommend that you go to the party is okay, but you can't say I recommend you go to the party.
Yes, you can.
You can, can't you? That's okay.
You can leave out that. Yeah. Why not? I think maybe we're confusing some listeners, because I can understand if you're thinking right now, what are they actually talking about? The truth is, we don't know what we're talking about, but we're just
wouldn't be the first time.
Wouldn't be the first time. We don't know what we're talking about, but then nobody really does. Only last night, I was checking in grammar books, really famous grammar books, about subjunctives. Nobody really knows what they are in English.
Yeah,
there's a very diverse range of opinion about when we are actually using a subjunctive in English. Believe it or not, we don't really know. Even English teachers don't agree about when they're using a subjunctive and when an indicative. We're not sure because they're of such little importance to us and we don't know much about them that we don't really know what one looks like.
And if you look in a course book, at the beginning of the course book where there's that table or map with the grammar that's in the course book, I don't think I've ever seen in a chapter of a course book for teaching English the subjunctive as something that's being taught,
yep,
like the gerund infinitive or the present perfect tense, etc. So it's not something that I've ever taught in the classroom.
Yeah. Well, I've kind of mentioned it in passing, but I've never attempted to teach it as such.
Yeah.
Because what is the subjunctive? Let's talk about the form of the subjunctive. In my opinion, but plenty of grammar books wouldn't agree with me, there are two types of subjunctive, the present and the past. The past subjunctive is exactly the same as the past indicative. So there's actually nothing to learn. For example, I traveled, you traveled, he, she, it traveled, we traveled, you traveled, they traveled. That could be the indicative or it could be the subjunctive.
They look
the same. So it doesn't really matter what you call it. There's only one exception, the verb to be, of course, which is I were, you were, he, she, it were, not I was, not he was, but I were, he were, we were, you were, they were. Apart from that, it's the same.
And that's very common in the second conditional if sentence. If I were you, I would. Although you can also hear quite often, if I was you.
Yeah, it's considered acceptable, right? So that's the past subjunctive. The present subjunctive, you might say, is possibly even easier in a way. The present subjunctive is the same as the past subjunctive, except take away the S from the third person singular. In my opinion, but you'll find other grammar books that don't agree with that. Some will, some will. So, for example, the verb to travel. I travel, you travel. He, she, it travel. No S, not travels. He, she, it travel. And then we travel, you travel, they travel. That's the present subjunctive of a verb.
So what would an example of that be in a sentence?
I recommend he travel without any luggage.
Right.
But it's also correct to use the indicative and say, I recommend he travels without any luggage. They're both accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the indicative is more common, in fact.
Yeah.
And the subjunctive sounds more formal. In many situations, unnecessarily formal. However, I've noticed, and I did find this confirmed in a grammar book that I checked with, that yes, it's more common in American English to use the subjunctive.
I didn't know that.
I always suspected it, and I coincided, in my opinion, with a grammar book I read last night, that it is used more in American English. You're more likely to hear an educated American saying, I recommend he travel without luggage than he travels. More common for an American than a British person to say.
A British person's more likely to say, I recommend he travels.
Curious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why it should be more popular in America, I don't know, but it is. The last thing I wanted to say is the verb to be, again, is irregular in the present. The verb to be subjunctive is, any ideas, listeners? I'll give you a few seconds to think about it.
Be.
Correct.
So an example would be?
Well, I'll go through the forms for you. I be, you be, he, she, it be, we be, you be, they be.
God, how can we expect students to learn that? That's so complicated.
So difficult, yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's either to be or it's not to be. Exactly. That's the question.
That is the question. But it's not very common in modern English to use the present subjunctive of the verb to be. It is common to use the past, as Craig correctly did earlier when he said, if I were you, rather than if I was you. That's the subjunctive, if I were you. But to say I be or he be is not common. But in theory, it's possible. Let me give you an example of one formal situation where you hear this. When a man and a woman are getting married in a church, there's a point in the ceremony when the congregation are asked, if there be any reason why this man and woman should not be married, you should speak now or forever hold your peace or something like that. I can't remember the exact words, but they do say, if there be any reason, any impediment to the marriage, if there be, not if there is, if there be, they use a subjunctive because it's very old-fashioned, very formal. That's an example of where you might hear it.
And I'm not sure if it's the subjunctive coming back into English or it's lack of awareness of the grammar. But in the United States, in street language, very informal, colloquial street language, you sometimes hear, you be mean, man. You be good. Yeah. I'll be watching you. Well, no, I'll be watching you is not exactly forming the tense correctly. But I'm not sure if that's coming back into the language with expressions like, you be cool, Reza.
Yeah. I'm not sure it's ever quite disappeared, but I doubt if those people realize they're using a subjunctive.
No, nope, probably not.
They think it sounds cool. It sounds cool.
Yeah, it'd be cool, man. So with other verbs, and there are other verbs that sometimes do go with a subjunctive in some situations, I think you have some verbs there that take the subjunctive.
Verbs which can be followed by the subjunctive but don't have to be are advise. Passengers are advised that the 5:15 to Swindon has been cancelled. A train announcement. Passengers are advised that the 5:15 train to Swindon has been cancelled.
Bing bong. Any others?
Ask, for example, I ask that he accompany us. Ooh, he accompany, no S, eh? Not he accompanies. I ask that he accompany us. That's subjunctive.
I ask that you put the gun down on the floor, sir.
And Craig, what about chucking in? What about throwing in now a negative subjunctive? So negative subjunctive is going to be the same as indicative, right? No, actually, no. Although it's not very common. I advise that he not go there. Toma, castaña.
I ask that you not put that in my face.
But isn't that very formal?
Yes, that's very formal English. But
that is the negative of subjunctive. So how do you do the negative subjunctive? I ask that he, and then we don't say don't, he not. Then the base form of the verb, go. So not he doesn't go, that's indicative, that he not go there. But that sounds to me rather formal.
Yeah.
But it does exist.
Mm-hmm. In certain situations.
Demand is a common one. Yeah. I demand you give back the money that you took. I insist.
We insist that all passengers check in before 6 p.m.
Propose. I propose we meet after dinner for a cocktail.
Very good.
Sounds very formal, doesn't it? I propose we meet after dinner for a cocktail. recommend?
I recommend that students not write on their question paper.
Request?
We request that all guests remove their muddy boots before entering the lobby.
Suggest?
I suggest that we have a break for coffee after this podcast.
Good suggestion.
Reza, I think there are also some expressions that can go with a subjunctive on occasion.
What do you mean, like fixed expressions?
Fixed expressions, yeah.
Can things you think like, it's a good idea that she stays behind.
So you've used an S there on the verb. It's a yep. good idea that she stays or that she stay behind.
Okay, so my question was going to be, did I use an indicative or a subjunctive?
You used, it could be either.
No, it couldn't. Not if I put an S on it. As far as I'm concerned, call me a stickler. If I said she indicative. Stays behind, it's an indicative.
Yeah.
But I could have said, Craig, what could I have said?
Without the S, that yep. she stay.
And then it's a subjunctive. Mm-hmm. It's a good idea that she stay behind. Subjunctive. It's a good idea that she stays behind. The S is the difference between indicative and subjunctive for the third person singular. But all the rest are the same, mm-hmm. in fact. And Craig, would you often use a subjunctive? Would you say it's a good idea that she stay behind? Or would you say it's a good idea that she stays behind yourself normally?
I think I'd use the indicative. I think I'd say it's a good idea that she stays behind. Yeah.
And if I put on a stupid American accent, does it sound more convincing? It's a good idea that she stay behind. Do Americans use subjunctive more?
I've never noticed it, but now you mention it, I think it's probably, they do. I think they do use the subjunctive more in those kind of expressions. Are there any more expressions that may go with subjunctive?
God save the Queen.
God save the Queen.
Not God saves. God save. No S.
Right.
God save the Queen.
That's
God,
subjunctive.
Third person singular. Mm-hmm. No S. It's a subjunctive. Fixed expressions. Yeah. Or long live the Queen. Not long lives. Long live.
But isn't that imperative?
You see, that's where, the debate comes in. You could say it's imperative. Long live the Queen.
Long live the Queen.
That's an order. Queen, live long. We want you to. Live long. Or is it a contraction of, we hope that the Queen live long.
Mm-hmm.
But in modern English, that doesn't sound good, so just reduce to long live the Queen.
So to summarise, I think we agree that really the subjunctive is not something that Spanish students should worry about. And I know that the subjunctive is used more in Spanish and in French. But in English, I don't know if it's really worth the time and effort to study it. You're better studying other areas of grammar.
Uh-huh. Whereas giddies like me and Craig should and do worry tremendously about the Spanish subjunctive because it's a bloody nightmare.
And I'm always making mistakes with the Spanish subjunctive.
Now, can you sympathize with us now, listeners? Now do you realize why all of us foreigners, all of us giddies or gringos for our South American listeners, make so much of a mess of subjunctive in English, sorry, in Spanish, because we don't really know what it is, because it's totally unimportant in English. That's why.
And it's another thing we have to learn. So yeah, we've got phrasal verbs for you to learn, but you've got the subjunctive for us to learn. We've got some audio feedback from Antonio Prieto from Cardiff. Who says, thank you for your podcast. I've been hearing you.
We could improve that.
We could improve that. I think it's better to say listening to you. I've been listening to you. What's the difference between hear and listen?
Good question. I would say you listen to something that means you intentionally mm-hmm. listen to it. You make an effort. You maybe plan it in advance. Or you concentrate, for example, listening to music, listen to what I'm going to say, listen to these instructions.
Listen to this podcast.
Exactly. Intentionally, we hope.
But you,
although we don't object if you happen to hear us accidentally, that's okay as well. We prefer you to listen to us with attention.
But you hear a noise, for example. So you'd hear some people speaking in the next room, but you're not necessarily actively listening. To it. That's the difference.
For example, did you hear that? Oh, I didn't know that was coming.
But that's not what Antonio asks. Here's the audio feedback from Antonio Prieto, who's been listening to us since our Dulce de Leche episode. Antonio also liked Mammon's feedback when she spoke with a very impressive American accent. That was back in episode 87. So if you want to hear Mammon speaking with a very good American accent, go to inglespodcast.com/87.
Hi, Rosa. Hi, Greg. This is Antonio from Arcos de la Frontera in Cádiz. I would like to say that my English have improved with your podcasts. I have been hearing you from Dulce de Leche episode, and I think so that you are very, very funny people and very good teacher. And you have very funny listener like Mammy, the one who spoke in American accent in the last episode. So congratulations, and please go on with this podcast. Bye-bye.
Another question we've been asked, and I'm sorry, I can't remember who asked this question, is about the verbs avoid and prevent. What's the difference between to avoid, evitar, esquivar, and to prevent, prevenir or evitar? They're quite similar, but there is a basic difference, Reza.
What do you reckon it is? What's your opinion?
Well, to prevent is when you take action to stop something before it starts. And to avoid is just to stay away from something. So if you prevent something from happening, then it's more active. It's más activo. For example, my dad prevented me from going to the rave. Do you remember raves? Those crazy parties where you take drugs?
Mm-hmm. I've actually never been to one in my life.
Me neither, unfortunately. That's something missing from my youth. But if your father or your dad prevents you from going, he's actively stopping you from doing something.
For example, he might lock the door. He might shout at you if you attempt to leave the house. He's taking action.
He's preventing you from going. He's taken away your car keys. Another example, if you get a flu shot or a flu vaccination for gripe, that would be prevention, because you're taking steps, you're taking action to prevent getting the flu.
Craig, do you know John?
Do I know John? Which John?
You don't know him, no. Well, you're lucky. Don't go near him. If I were you, I would avoid John.
Why?
He's bad news. He's bad news. He's aggressive. He argues with everyone. Don't go anywhere near John.
So
avoid John.
I should avoid speaking to John.
So I'm asking you to take no action concerning John. Just don't engage with him.
Yeah.
That's avoid.
And now we have some feedback from another Javier, the third Javier on this podcast, Javier G from the Basque Country. Hi, Javier. Javier left us some audio feedback, and we'll play that for you. And we're not playing this because he is saying how wonderful we are and how great the podcast is. We're playing this because if you send us audio feedback, we really, really appreciate it. You're practicing your English, you're practicing your speaking, and I feel an obligation to put this into the podcast so that the people who took the effort and made the effort to record their voice can hear it on the podcast. So here's Javier G from the Basque Country.
Hello, my friends. This is Javier G, another Javier who listens to podcasts. I'm from Tolosa, Basque Country, and I am in American English 46. I have been listening to you from January 2010. I've downloaded all your podcasts. I take 5 years with you. You are almost my family. I have to tell you that I've learned a lot of English with you. I listen to podcasts in the car when to work, at home, when I do sports, even when I try and sleep, everywhere. Really, Your work is fantastic, and I hope you are there for a long time. You are an angel. Bye.
Thank you, Javier, for sending in your voice message. We really appreciate the wonderful things you've said about our podcast. However, don't forget it's listen to you. Very good use of the present perfect, though, Reza, when he says, I have downloaded all your podcasts.
Yes.
Well done.
Good grammar.
And also, I have learned a lot of English with you. One more thing. It's do sport, not practice sport. So I listen to your podcasts when I do sport. And speaking of people who are kind enough to send us their feedback and their comments, we received some feedback from Mamin. Hi, Mamin. About our sponsor for this podcast, iTalki. Mamin very kindly sent us her opinion of her personal experience with iTalki. So just listen to Mamin and see what she thinks of iTalki.
Hi, guys. This is Mamin. How are you doing? I only speak with you because I had a class last night with an English teacher from iTalki, and I think it was amazing, and I think I want to share with you because I know it's your sponsor, so my teacher was very funny, and we were talking about our things only for half an hour, but I think it's enough to see if there is something in common or something like that. And maybe I check another teacher, but just in case, I don't know. I think I'm going to continue with my classes, and it's a good experience, and thank you for all. Big hug, kisses, bye.
Thanks, Mamin. Thanks very much for taking the time to send that in to us. And as Reza and I agree, because we've both studied with iTalki and we agree that it's a wonderful service, it's convenient, you can learn at home using technology, it's affordable because there's no language school in the middle, you're connected directly with a teacher, which means the price is generally lower than a language school, and it's personal because you get customized, personalized learning from your teacher and that human connection. So you're not studying with apps and software. So we agree with Mamin that iTalki is a very useful service for anybody thinking of working with a teacher online. And Reza and I would like to thank iTalki very much for sponsoring Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig.
Some more feedback, and you'll be glad to hear that this person's not called Javier, just for a bit of variety. We like the name Javier, but our fourth person is called Paloma, and she says, good morning, Craig and Reza. My name is Paloma, and I live in Segovia. I've been to Segovia, beautiful place.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Really nice. The aqueduct is stunning. It takes your breath away. So Paloma says, I listened to your podcast just a month ago when I luckily came across them looking for some listenings. And I must say, you two are doing a wonderful job. Well, she said a wonderful work, but a wonderful job is better.
Because work is uncountable. So you can say doing wonderful work, but not a wonderful work. A wonderful job.
So she says she's very grateful. Thank you, Paloma.
Thanks, Paloma.
Now, making profit, ooh, what would we say, Craig?
Making profit of your kindness. She's trying to say aprovechando?
Yes.
To take advantage of.
Okay, so now, taking advantage of your kindness, I wonder if you could clarify this sentence. She writes, I hope you don't mind my asking. Which I believe is correct. Instead of, I hope you don't mind me asking, or I hope you don't mind if I ask. Paloma goes on, I'm not sure which one is best. I always use the first one, though, and when and how to use it, thank you in advance. And she writes, P.S. If whenever you happen to come to Segovia, please let me know. I will be delighted to show you my little but beautiful town. Kisses, Paloma. Thank you, Paloma. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I will definitely get in touch next time I'm in Segovia.
One thing, though, I wouldn't say if whenever. I would say if you happen or whenever you happen to come to Segovia, but it's not correct to say if whenever, because right. they kind of mean the same thing.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Paloma. We'll do that. Well, Craig, about her question then, which one do you think's right, or is more than one right?
I think they're all correct, but the first one sounds formal to me, a bit more formal. I hope you don't mind my asking is correct, but it's more formal than the others. Do you agree?
Yes. And what type of word is my?
It's a possessive adjective.
What about the second one, she said? I hope you don't mind me asking. What type of word is me?
That's a pronoun.
So they're both possible. Possessive adjective or possessive pronoun. Yes, Paloma, they're both correct. But as Craig said, I agree. I think the possessive adjective my is more formal.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree?
Yeah. Yeah. So you can use either. In writing, if formal writing, I would use the first one. I hope you don't mind my asking.
And I hope you don't mind if I ask. Also fine.
Yeah. The one I would probably choose in conversation, in speaking, would be the second one. I hope you don't mind me asking, but where did you buy your shirt?
Yeah. Because it doesn't sound too formal, does it?
No, neutral.
And it doesn't sound too informal, kind of in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
We hope that answers your question, Paloma. And we look forward to seeing you someday in Segovia.
Our next piece of audio feedback is from Maria Jose, who sent us a message about the past perfect continuous. So here is Maria Jose.
Hello, my name is Maria Jose, and I live in Villena, Alicante. I study V2, and I need a bit of help. Can you explain it to us, the difference between past perfect continuous and past continuous? You are great teachers. Thanks for your help.
Thank you, Maria Jose. And I did answer your email, and we have answered your question, but I forgot to put your message in the episode in which we answered your question. So if you go back to episode 91, two episodes ago, with Mike, we spoke about the past perfect simple, the past perfect continuous. And if there is anything in that episode that isn't clear to you, or you have any more questions about the past perfect continuous, just send us another message. Finally, Reza, we have another email.
We have email from Emilia. She writes, ¿Me podrían aclarar unas dudas, por favor? Of course we can. ¿Cómo es correcto decir? And her first question. I turn 16 this Sunday. Or, I am turning 16 this Sunday.
That's quite strange, because to turn is girar. Mm-hmm. And the expression to turn 16 or to turn 20 is when your age changes. But it's mm-hmm. not an expression that you can translate into Spanish. Voy a cumplir. So of those two possibilities, you've got present simple, I turn 16 this Sunday, or present continuous, used for the future, I am turning 16 this Sunday. Would you choose either of those? Any preference?
I have a preference for the present simple. I turn 16 this Sunday because I identify present simple for a future action or state, which is fixed time.
Right, so you mean the same as a kind of a schedule or a timetable, like the train leaves at 6 or the lesson begins at 7
exactly.
or the plane takes off at 9?
It can't be changed. Your birthday can't be changed. It's a fixed time, so present simple.
Although I don't think the present continuous is wrong. It sounds okay to me. I'm turning 36 this weekend.
It sounds very authentic, and it sounds like this type of thing a native speaker would say.
Mm-hmm.
However, I find it impossible to justify grammatically, although I would probably say it myself. But I can't justify it, because Turning 16 next Sunday is a fact.
It's not a plan, is it?
Not a plan. We don't care if you plan it or not. It's going to happen because it's science. It's mathematics. So the normal use of the present continuous for future is for plans or arrangements. But this isn't a plan or arrangement. It's a simple fact.
It could be used perhaps as you're saying you're celebrating your birthday.
Yeah, exactly.
You're having a party. You're receiving presents. So this idea of some kind of celebration or party on that day makes you use the present continuous.
Yeah. It's kind of implied, isn't it? When you say I'm turning 16, mm-hmm. you understand, oh, you're celebrating it. And that's a plan. But just the act of becoming 16, no.
Right.
However, it's perfectly good also to use a future simple. I will turn 16 this Sunday. That's fine because will for the future is for scientific facts.
I would use future simple with be. I'd say I'll be 16 this. Yeah, okay. Also, I'll be 16 this Sunday.
Right. Amelia's second question is, she writes, the festival starts in the evening.
Present simple.
Or the festival is starting in the evening. Present continuous. Well, in this case, Amelia, I think both are good and I can justify them easily grammatically. Present simple, because it's a fixed future time. It's a timetable. Festival starts. Or the festival is starting, present continuous, because it's a plan or arrangement. There's no ambiguity whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I would also add that going to is possible. The festival is going to start in the evening. Because going to plus infinitive is for a future intention.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Do you agree? Yep, absolutely. I couldn't have put it better myself. Thank you for your questions, Amelia. And if you have any questions about grammar, vocabulary, pronunciation, or anything connected to English, please send us a voice message or an email. Your emails should go to myself, that's craig@inglespodcast.com.
Or you could write to me at belfastreza@gmail.com.
If you prefer to send us a voice message, which we would prefer, you can go to inglespodcast.com/speakpipe. That's SPEAKPIPE to leave your voice message. And 7 episodes from now, because this is the 93rd episode, we're going to celebrate our 100th episode, which for us is very exciting to reach that landmark of 100 episodes. And we would like to ask you if you could send us your success stories connected to English, your wins. How has English helped you? Because of my English, perhaps you have got a better job, or because of your English, maybe you got a promotion. Because of your English, maybe you traveled to London, you ordered a pizza, you met people. Maybe because of your English, you made friends with an English speaker somewhere. Anything you can think of that has been a positive experience because of your English, we would love to hear about it. So send us a voice message with your story to inglespodcast.com/speakpipe. And we will put your message in our 100th episode. And we're also going to give a prize, a special prize of an Inglés Podcast t-shirt to the best story. So please make sure that your stories are true and we'll give a prize to the best one. So next week, we're going to speak about commonly mispronounced words, words that have strange or unusual spellings that Spanish speakers sometimes pronounce incorrectly. Until then, it's goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.
Goodbye. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week. The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later.